Hi guys, it's Shane here. Before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to let you know that you can find us on Telegram as we have a pretty active chat group there. You can find that through linuxlads.com/telegram. You can also follow us on Twitter at linuxlads. You can also find us on Mastodon. You can get to that through linuxlads.com/mastodon. You can also email us on show@linuxlads.com. If you're really enjoying the podcast, you can donate some money to contribute to our server costs at linuxlads.com/donate. Thanks very much, and let's get back to the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Linux Lads. This is the only podcast that insert coronavirus joke here. This week, as always, I'm Shane.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Mike.
And we are the Linux Lads. So, this week, what have we been up to? Mike?
Yeah, well, as pretty much the rest of the population, I've reduced my existence to messing on my computer in my flat and getting paid for it, and then messing on my computer in my flat in my spare time, because that's pretty much the only thing I can do. Although I went for a walk to St. Anne's Park today, and it was lovely. It was it's a really nice place as well, and the day was nice, so that was a bit of a outing on my break. But other than that, that's basically like the rest of the country, at least the people who, you know, work for never mind, I'll start again. Yeah, basically, I'm just working from home. That's all I'm doing.
He's totally going to keep that in.
Yeah, no, it's totally, yeah. It is nice to see people actually going back about 50 years in their pastimes. Like, I saw so many people, you know, having a walk with their kids and like on bikes and everything, and just very wholesome stuff happening outside my window. So yeah, you know, I know the virus is kind of dominating everything and it's making life really weird and sad, but like, yeah, I don't know, I choose to see the positives, and that's one of them. You know, we're all staying at home, eating, getting our vitamin D, or the opposite of that. Personally, I've been like learning how to work leather into armor and sharpen sticks and everything, because I don't know. I mean, you know, I would say all jokes aside, but I guess this is a joke. Like, I do actually kind of, you know, there in the back of our heads, we're all thinking, man, this is why we fantasized about all those zombie apocalypse scenarios on the toilet. Like, this is, it's all been leading up to this moment.
That is a nice, that's a nice window into your soul, man.
Specifically, on the toilet, you'll be thinking about zombie apocalypses.
You don't want a window in there, my friend. You don't want a window in there.
The inner workings of mind of Shane.
Yeah, so it's nice for all these like survival techniques we've been dreaming about for years, you know. Maybe I'll have a use for them. Connor, yours is a bit more Linux related.
Well, like, you guys have been working from home, so you guys have been fairly in depth on that, so I kind of gloss over that bit. I also have been testing 2004, the daily images, because it's not out yet as of time of this recording, and it's looking very promising. I would nearly say at this stage it's daily driverable. I don't say that lightly. It's looking quite good at the way it is currently, and I think, as we'll get into the news later on, I think the latest version of GNOME will actually be shipping in 2004, because they haven't really frozen the features yet. So it's actually a good time to check out 2004. On less upbeat news, I've also been messing around with E/E/E Foundation, or whatever you want to call it. I've been listening to the Binary Times, and Mark has been singing its praises so much that I kind of decided to check it out. I discovered that there were builds for my phone. My current phone is the OnePlus 5T. And I had been messing around with various custom ROMs, so I was kind of fast routing and ADBing to my heart's content anyway. So I said, screw it, I might as well try this out. And in my enthusiasm, in my hubris, you might say, that I think I've ended up soft bricking my phone. So that's a
Is that like your main phone?
I do have a backup phone, kindly provided to me by work. So I've been resigned to my work phone, but it is still a dual SIM phone. But yeah, that's my main phone that I had been using up until that point. Long story short is, I think the versions that I had been flashing were all all the custom ROMs I had been flashing were all based off Android 9, and the firmwares that that is what is officially supported. That, in other words, the OEM stock ROM on my phone is Android 9. So all the firmwares and everything like that were all built for Android 9. I think I made the mistake because the image for EOS or E Foundation or whatever you want to call it is actually based off an older version of Lineage and might be based off Android 8. So I may have inadvertently flashed that image and then flashed the Android 9 firmware, and it caused a bit of a boot loop, unfortunately. And in my panic, what I did was, because I was able to get into fast mode on my phone, it's an alternative way of booting up if those are completely unfamiliar. It now enables your phone to go into a mode that's just easily flashable by commands on your computer. And then I wiped the boot partition and said, that's fine, because I can still I'll still be able to boot into recovery. Ended up not being able to boot into recovery. Decided to wipe the recovery partition, and then after I wiped the recovery partition, I decided to reflash the recovery partition with TWRP, or Team Win Recovery Project, which is a well-known recovery image. And I kept getting permission denied messages, and I'm thinking, but I'm running this in root. Like I was running the commands in root off my Linux terminal on my computer, and I was kept getting these permission denied messages. So unfortunately, that is currently the stage that my OnePlus 5T is at the moment, because I wiped both the boot and the recovery partition. This was a last attempt to try and recover something out of it, because, as I said, it was in a boot loop and it didn't seem to be able to flash anything above over those. It's now booting into fast mode, and that is all it's booting into currently. And any attempt to flash anything else gets the permission denied messages. In my research, they said you might be better off doing, I don't know how, but you might be better off doing it via Windows, doing the ADB over Windows. So I might have to borrow a relative's Windows laptop and try it then. But it's not a immediate priority for me at the moment, because as I said, I'm using another phone, and that gets me done in my day to day with work related things like answering texts and WhatsApp messages and everything. And needless to say, answering phone calls, because that's like, you need a phone day to day. So some weekend when I'm not doing anything, I will see if I can get that back. But I will not knock, that was essentially mostly all my fault. I will not knock anything from the E Foundation. The E Foundation actually does look quite promising from all of the videos that I've seen of it. And of course, Mark on the Binary Times is constantly singing its praises. So it does look interesting, and I would like to really check it out, but unfortunately I can't currently.
So, on to the news. First up, PopShell wants to bring proper tiling window features to GNOME Shell.
And it's not final. Certainly at the point that they were recording the video demonstration, because they've kind of annotated it, and they've said that LOL, there's still bugs kind of thing. So it's kind of a quirky kind of video. It looks really snazzy. It looks really promising. The only thing that is, to my eyes anyway, is kind of broke the workflow is the way the Gnome Shell by default has the additional spaces along the right, which kind of makes sense for the Gnome Shell, but this is a kind of a new way of interacting with things. And from my point of view, but again, this is entirely subjective, is if you're doing some kind of tiling window manager or ish interface, and you're doing everything from the keyboard, you kind of want to pop windows in and out and kind of switch them around, which in the demonstration they seem to be able to do quite easily with the keyboard commands. But then they were kind of also introducing the draggable spaces on the side, and we're kind of dragging things around with the mouse and into the draggable spaces. To me, it's kind of, that's the traditional Gnome Shell paradigm, and I was thinking, pick one or the other. I mean, it's almost, maybe they're trying to cater to both camps by implementing both, but in my view, anyone who kind of likes the traditional paradigm will just stick to stock Gnome Shell, and anyone who wants this will probably want to get away from that a bit, and would so maybe have it as a toggle in the settings of whatever this shell extension is, and have it as a toggle and just say disable the draggable spaces on the side, and just have it as purely that, and then you can launch all the apps and have them tile around as much as you want. But it definitely looks very slick and snazzy, and there's nice kind of snap effects and nice kind of ghost rectangles or so on, kind of giving you an idea of what you're about to manipulate, and there's kind of nice highlighting, kind of blue tinge highlighting in the particular theme that they're showing off, of highlighting what we are manipulating, where you want to manipulate it to, and it actually looks quite promising for the early stage that it's in. Have either of you guys checked this out or checked out the video of the demonstration?
I'm looking at the video now, the video that is linked to the article that you put into the show notes, and yeah, it looks pretty good. I definitely understand what they are trying to achieve here, because I like the way GNOME on its own works, and I like tiling managers, window managers as well. I'm using i3 at the moment, and this is basically trying to combine the goodness of GNOME, with everything included, and the tiling aspect of tiling window managers. And I think they are, at least from what it looks like, they are doing a good job. I can see some shortcuts here. They include arrow keys, and personally, I always like my shortcuts Vim-like, basically the home row, because it's just the extra 5 centimeters that you have to move your hand to reach for the arrow keys on your keyboard, and that's basically not all that great. But I don't know if the shortcuts can be reassigned on this, if you can basically assign something like HJKL plus super to move the windows around and resize them. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I've always been intrigued by the idea of tiling window managers, but I've never really actually took the time to sit down and actually try one out. So, I could try this one. Might have a lot of free time, and that's what scared me off i3. It was too Spartan for me. I could have gone and just looked up the docs and learned how to use it, but with PopShell, I guess if it has that kind of nice spit and polish, it gets you a little bit more interested in trying it.
I've got two words for you: Regolith and Manjaro. Both are distributions. So Manjaro i3, which is what I'm using, and the Ubuntu-based Regolith OS, they both customize the distribution, include i3, theme it, and also include such luxuries as your volume control, your Wi-Fi widget, so you don't get that Spartan. You don't have to do everything yourself. You get perfectly working workstation. Manjaro even includes a wallpaper that has got the basic shortcuts written on it, like a cheat sheet. So if you want to try that, there is no need to submerge yourself deep into the config files for half a day before you can use it.
Yeah, I might try that out. I hate that there's so many good distros coming along because, you know, I've set out my stall with Zorin on both my machines and I'm just like, no more cool shit. I don't want to fall in love with a different distro. So, next up, we'll move on. System 76 are looking to take on Apple with their own keyboard. I was looking at pictures of this. I know this is a kind of a recent addition to the news. I was looking at pictures of it. It's honestly not my thing. It's I like good build quality and I like that they're doing something like this, but like I don't know, the whole like mechanical keyboard thing, like I just don't get it. I'm sorry, I have a mechanical keyboard and I want to get rid of it. It's too noisy, it's too clunky, it feels weird. I'm sorry, I don't like mechanical keyboards. I don't know if this is mechanical actually, but I'm just guessing. But yeah, Mike, you tell us more about this.
I think it is. I'm looking. So there are a few distinct things, or three distinct things about the pictures that we are looking at. Obviously, this is from a Forbes article by Jason Evangelo, and the link is going to be in the show notes. There is a picture of it. It's not. It doesn't look like it's finished yet, because you know they're just only starting on it. But there are immediately what comes at you. It has got a distinct color scheme. Some keys are orange, some keys are blue, most keys are kind of dirty white, and there's some gray as well. I think this is meant to be reminiscent of, was it ZX Spectrum or something? I'm not a real geek, really, because I don't know my old computers, but people could probably tell me what this is reminiscent of. Like, it is definitely looking like one of these old computers of yesteryear. And the second thing is it has got shift and backspace down at the bottom where your normal space bar would be, and I can't see the space bar, which is weird.
Look, I'm looking at the photographs as well, and I was looking at the photographs before we started recording. Yeah, the shift in this backspace where the space bar is hurting my brain, and also the fact that I genuinely cannot find where the spacebar is in the photograph, or maybe they're guessing one of the multi-colored blank functional keys. They're saying, oh, you can make that the space or something like that. Maybe that is the way they're doing it. But yeah, Mike is correct. This has a very old school looking, like almost IBM Model M kind of really 80s looking thing. So if that is your if that's your jam, then you might certainly enjoy this. Nothing against mechanical keyboards, if this is a mechanical keyboard. I mean, I have a mechanical keyboard myself. They're great for if you like the tactile feel underneath your fingers as you're typing, the kind of response of that. But you can get different switches, like you can get linear switches that don't have the tactile feel as well. You can get more silent switches. It's just the robust feeling of the build quality is more than anything else. You don't really have a plastic feel. It's generally kind of made out of metal. At least the housing of it, the keycaps are made out of very robust plastic, presumably, but it doesn't have the cheap feeling plastic. But yeah, the fact that they're changing the layout of things kind of hurts my brain a bit. Some people like the Dvorak layout. Some people say there's more efficient ways of doing it. Yeah, sure, but like I suppose, like it or hate it, That's the QWERTY layout is how most people learn how to type, and it's kind of ingrained in their brain. It's almost like saying somebody who's ridden a bike and say, oh, now when you turn the bike handlebars left, the bike is going to turn right, or something like that. It's going to completely mess with your brain and go, wait, this is rewiring my brain. I don't know how to ride a bike anymore. That's almost like how it feels like when people kind of change the layout of a keyboard.
I am very, very curious to actually get a Dvorak keyboard. I really want to try that out. Just curiosity. Go ahead.
I changed the keys on my keyboard a little bit, and what amazes me that somebody's going to through all this work to, you know, reassign tab space and changed quite a few things around while still keeping the QWERTY layout for the main bit. But what they didn't do is to swap caps lock and escape, which is what should be the norm on every keyboard. Because who needs caps lock? I think, anyway, I don't know, maybe some people still use it. But I do like the keyboard, and I have I also use a mechanical keyboard at work, which is now sadly sitting on a desk in an empty office, as I didn't take it home with me. But and this looks quite pretty. I mean, I wonder what it's going to look like when they actually finish it, because it doesn't seem to have all the necessary plastic bits around the actual keys, unless it's meant to be like screwable into the desk. But yeah, it's an interesting effort, and putting it together with the i3 with the tiling manager that we've talked about before, it seems that System76 is really targeting a very specific audience here. I don't know, like people who have very specific needs about keyboards, because I'm pretty sure that this is going to be customizable. I can't be, I don't know anything about it yet, but I'd imagine there might be tooling to assign the keys in the software on any Linux machine. So this is targeted at people who are into this kind of stuff, and it is definitely exciting.
I just want to say that I'm not bearing any ill will towards System76. I highly commend their experimental nature and the very fact that they're a Linux-first company, and they came up with Pop!OS, which isn't really for me, but I highly commend them for doing so. And they're experimenting and they're doing nice things, and they're coming out with both hardware and software. It's just, this doesn't strike me as something for me. But for those curious about why they're replacing the space bar with two keys, I'll just read out a quote that is from the System76 CEO, Carl Rochelle. In our research, we found that space bars typically, for example, are way too long, which means that your strongest digit, your thumb, isn't very useful. Most of the time, you use your pinky because that's what's out there to the extremities. So we wanted to change that. We wanted a better layout. Well, fair play to them for thinking outside the box, but I don't know if this keyboard will be for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, ergonomics is really important, and they are right. Your strongest finger is your thumb, and you are not using it as much as your pinky, and that can lead to, well, that basically exacerbates the risk of RSIs. So, you know, they might have a point there. I mean, the whole keyboard might be up for redesigning the whole layout, but then again, we are all used to the current one, so that would be very difficult for everybody to switch to something maybe a bit more healthy.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting price. It's cool to see. It's cool to see a company like this getting into the hardware space a little bit more. So something, you know, could be interesting. See where it goes. And the customizability is definitely a selling point for me. Not that I would actually buy it, but yeah. So I think we'll move on. Half-Life Alyx to be available on Linux.
Woo!
I'm glad someone else put this in for me, because I shat myself when I saw the Alex trailer, because I don't know if anyone knows, but I'm a huge fan of Valve's games, like Half-Life 1, Half-Life 2, Portal, Portal 2. They're basically perfect games, as far if you ask me. So I just think Valve have a fucking talent for game design. I love them. Because I'm not a hardcore gamer, so they hit that lovely sweet spot for me between enjoyability and challenge, you know? I don't really care about being like the top scorer or the online PvP elite guy. Like, I don't give a shit about any of that. I just want a good experience, and that's what they do. So yeah, this might be the game that makes me buy a virtual reality headset. I'm pretty sure. But it's going to be available on Linux, which is the point of all this. As they were saying, it'll be playable on Proton with DirectX 11 at launch. Post-launch, we'll be aiming to provide Vulkan and Linux support through subsequent updates. So, you know, that's fine. Cool.
Yeah, very much so. I don't own any VR hardware at the moment, and it's not in any of my short to medium term upgrade kit buying goals. But certainly, any time that I've played around with VR over at a friend's house or something like that, it's been very interesting. Like very fun games like Beat Saber and so on. And there's also some very good kind of gun and shooting games. I think there's a gun game that is pretty much just a kind of a demo of it. Like, it's, you're pretty much just at a shooting range. It's more the gun mechanics. It's like, hey, we know how to program gun mechanics, and this is our demonstration that we can program gun mechanics. What Half-Life Alyx does is it seems to take the same gun mechanics and then flesh out a larger storyline around it. By that I mean, to load your gun, you literally take a clip out and place it, your two hands together, and place it in the virtual gun. That's how you reload, and it means that there's some tracking to one of your hands going behind you to pick up a clip and that sort of thing. And if you want to aim, you literally look down the iron sights of the gun, the virtual gun that you're holding, rather than having a receptacle, or I don't know the exact word to describe it, but do you know the
reticle,
that's the word. If the out in software to show you where you're aiming. If you want to aim, you look down the iron sights. So that's really interesting. It's good basic mechanics. The mechanics they've got well are the basic mechanics they've done well, and then to flesh out a in-depth, like, fascinating storyline, which only Valve can do, especially in the Half-Life universe around it. Yeah, this is a very compelling and exciting game, and I'm glad that there will be some Steam or some Linux support. I should nearly say some Steam support. Of course, it has Steam support. It's freaking Valve. Some Linux support, at least to Proton initially, and then later down the line when they decide they're going to port it over to Vulkan.
Yeah, the mechanics is what I'm really looking forward to, because any VR titles I've seen so far, any gameplay trailers, the vast majority of them look gimmicky and boring, and I just think that Valve have that secret sauce that they put in their games, that they will make it far more compelling. They will use the VR properly. This is where we're going to see a game that actually takes advantage of the VR in a really creative way. And I trust them to do that, and I think they will.
Another thing I noticed in the trailer is they seem to have taken on a version of the gravity gun or magnetic gun or something. The gun that was in Half-Life 2 is now, it's a glove on your hand, so you can kind of force pull things towards you and force push, launch things away from you.
I remember seeing that in the trailer, yeah.
It,
Oh yeah, when I saw that in the trailer, I was like, oh my god, you have a gravity gun.
Gravity glove, even better.
But Mike, have you ever played any Half-Life games? Or
yeah, I actually have. I think all of them. Except for the Alyx now. But I finished the first one, and I never finished the second one. I'm just a really, really shitty gamer. I basically get into something, spend a lot of time getting up to a completely not miserable level with it, and then I lose interest for some reason because something else catches my eye and I have the attention span of a duck. So
I can fully relate to that. Fully relate to that.
For me, it was one of the physics puzzle elements in the original Half-Life. I got to a stage where I'm thinking, oh, this is really cool, this is really interesting, and I'm enjoying the ever more difficult challenges, and I seem to be able to match these challenges. Then I got to a stage where I'm like, I literally spent like 15 or 20 minutes on the one thing that probably should have taken 2 minutes, and tried it over and over and over again, trying it different ways, and just kept dying, and I'm like, fuck this shit, and just gave up. Literally rage quit in the middle of Half-Life.
Yeah, I see. I know I love a game when I finish the game and I'm like, that game was too short. I was the opposite of you, Mike. I didn't finish the first one. I didn't play that as much, but I played it enough, like you. And then the second one, I played religiously for like a week, and I completed it within like a week. But the fact is that as games go, they don't make very difficult games. I mean, it's no Dark Souls or anything like that. Like it's a story driven game, and they tend to be more about the mechanic than the difficulty and, you know, the experience of it. So that's what I like about Valve. You know, they don't make games for elites. You know, I don't want a game to cause me stress. I want a game to enjoy myself.
So you're basically shitting off all over my gaming skills right there. You're like, but the whole point of Half-Life is they're not difficult games. I mean, it's all about the storyline. I know. But all that I was thinking,
but like, they're a bit difficult. Like, there's you still have to have some challenge, yeah. Obviously. But normally, like, I didn't want to give up is the point. I kept trying the hard bits, and I never do that with games. I'm exactly like Mike. I would play it, and as soon as I'm cruising along nicely and only having to repeat things two or three times each, then, you know, I'm good with that, you know. But as soon as I hit a brick wall, and I'm like, no, this is too hard, and I never play it again. But never got that with this game.
So on the basis of all this nostalgia trip, I'm totally checking out a game that I've owned for a very long time and has been in development for a very long time. But now I think it's been completed to 100% development recently, and all of this talk makes me want to go back and play it, or play it for the first time, and that is Black Mesa. I really want to play Black Mesa now.
Yeah, you just gave me that idea again. I forgot it existed until now.
For those who don't know, it's the 100%. Not even a remaster, it's a remake of the first Half-Life game using the Source engine from the, I think it's from the second Half-Life, or they might even be have based it on more recent Source engines, as, you know, the portals have come out and there's kind of been more updates on that engine. So I don't know, I think they've been updating the engine going along as newer versions of the engine have been coming out. So it's
why haven't I played that yet? I think we'll move on. Jesus, we spent a lot of time.
It's Half-Life, bro. No regrets.
Firefox now has a flat pack. That's interesting.
It's interesting because now it's an easy way to get Firefox, and I'm not saying that Firefox is particularly hard to get, but it's nice that it's in the kind of snap flat pack containerized element of it, of you know that it's going to be updated regularly, you don't have to go through any PPA hijinks if you want a beta version or development version on Ubuntu, whereas previously if you wanted the Firefox beta, like sometimes you had to add a PPA. Now it was from the Mozilla team, like I said, Mozilla team PPA, so they were trustworthy, but still it's felt like going outside the official sanctioned software repositories in order to get the better version of Firefox. And I believe now that on launch, so it comes out with Firefox 74, which is the latest version, but I think with the different streams that you can get in Flatpaks and Snaps, this is about Flatpaks, but the different streams, you can select a beta channel, and I think immediately at launch there, this Firefox 75 beta was also available, so if you wanted to change it to the beta or experimental branch of Flatpak, that the Mozilla had released that as well. So yeah, you can stay 100% up to speed with your Firefox builds if you want.
Next up, we'll move on to the Purism Libre Mini as a FOSS-focused Linux PC with a vague release date, says OMG Ubuntu. Mike?
Well, I would dispute the word is there, because at best it is going to be. It is not available yet. It is what it is, basically. It is something slightly smaller than the Mac Mini, but in the same kind of nice little box to put on your desk format, which is a nice format for a small PC. With from Purism, who obviously make the Librem laptops, and the who make the Librem 5 phone that we've talked at length a few episodes back. And the Librem 5 that we talked about at length a few episodes back. When they do this, it's going to cost $700 or $699. And what you get is an i7 at 1.8 gigahertz quad core, 8 gigabytes of RAM that you can upgrade up to maximum 64, integrated Intel graphics, 250 gigabytes of M.2 storage, no Wi-Fi, unless you can obviously add it, but extra. There's plenty of ports, and it's a Linux box, so I think it's slightly on the pricier side. But that's not the problem that I kind of have with it. The problem is, to me, that what they are doing here is 1 month after they've collected 50,000 worth of pre-orders, they will start shipping this. It is, you know, and I know many companies do this kind of thing, but Librem, they keep continuously asking for money ahead, which is weird. And then we've got the experience with them of asking for money ahead and then delivering a product late and maybe not as good as what as could have been reasonably expected. Now, this is obviously my opinion, but there's also a lot of experience, not personal experience, but there's also a lot of, we've been watching them and we've been hearing about Librem or about Purism for a long time, so they keep doing this. They need the money ahead in order to produce something, and when they do produce it, historically it hasn't always been up to the expectations of the people. Now, I'm not gonna buy this. What about you guys?
Nah, it's too expensive for what it is. Like, I mean, I understand there's like an M.2 and there is a pretty okay i7, but other than that, I don't understand how they reached that price. It's not worth it.
Yeah, no, I don't know why they charge this much money, or if this is even too much. I mean, you can get, for example, for $1,400, you can get the Mintbox 3, which is a lot more computer. It's slightly bigger, but it has got It has got 16 gigabytes of RAM. Well, anyway, you know what? I'm not vivid today. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'll start again and I'll just say that I don't know. I don't know why they charge a lot for it. I'm thinking that it's probably not that much. You know, there are computers. I think it's like kind of for a Linux computer where they also put a lot of work into making it compatible with Linux and everything working. I think that might be all right. I'm not sure. It's just the way they operate is what drives me away from purism.
Yeah, but I don't know about other people. I don't think I'd be alone here, but looking at those specs, I mean, the form factor, I don't know how much I'd pay for that. The Linux support is not something I feel is really matters all that much, because I can't really think of a computer that I can't put Linux on or won't work well with Linux these days. So yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm not the target audience. I guess I would never really buy one of these. I like my big massive towers, you know.
Well, to be honest, comparable Mac Mini, I know this is not a comparison, but comparable Mac Mini costs you $800. So also 4-core, although the Mac Mini has got massively higher, that has basically double the clock speed.
I'd never buy a Mac Mini. I'd never buy an Intel Nook or anything like that. I just, yeah, I don't see the point.
That was my immediate reaction. Was that, and Shane just mentioned it there, was what is the difference between this, which they're charging their $699 for, and you going out and buying an i7 Intel Nook and slapping Pure OS on top of it? I mean, I'm sure you'd be able to make substantial savings there. I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head whether you how much savings you would be, or even if the price would be roughly comparable. But that is my immediate reaction after seeing this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm conscious that maybe based on what Librem have done before, I'm not gonna say done, like just how they've kind of done things. You know, we've talked about this at length. I'm not going to go into it, but like based on, you know, the color Librem has in my mind, or not Librem, Librem or Purism? I can never remember. Which one is the Purism?
Purism is the name of the company. Okay. Librem is what they call their products.
Yeah. Okay. I had a brain fart. So yeah, with Purism, I don't know. Maybe I'm biased or something, and I'm automatically going, what's this all about? You know, but, yeah, I don't know. I guess, as I said, I'm going to be fair and say that I don't think mini PCs are my type of thing anyway.
I can see the point of a mini PC. Certainly as a set-top box, possibly, like underneath your TV or something like that. You could, I mean, it'd be well overkill to run something like LibreLec on something on it, because LibreLec can run on a Raspberry Pi, so running it on an i7 would be definitely overkill. But who knows, like you could turn it into an emulator box and could literally run everything on it. I mean, run your legally sourced GameCube ROMs or PS3 ROMs, because there's PS3 emulators now and everything. I mean, if you have an i7, but I'm guessing for the PS3 ROMs you need a decent graphics card in there as well, so maybe not just an Intel Nook. But yeah, your likes of your GameCube or that kind of generation, maybe PlayStation 2 kind of thing, that might be a bit beyond what a Raspberry Pi could run, or run your 4K Blu-ray files that you've ripped off your Blu-ray, your legitimate sourced Blu-rays, things like that. Maybe that is your use case, that you want something really powerful underneath your computer or underneath your TV. Then sure. Or if you want something that, if you say, oh, I want to hook this up to my two monitors, and this is my literally my desktop, and You don't need anything more than just integrated Intel graphics, and you just run your two monitors off that, and that is your sole desktop computer rather than your tower, in replacement of a tower, then sure, certainly I can see that. I do think for this they're charging a bit much for it, but that's just my opinion.
So, on to the meat in the sandwich of this episode. Today, very topical, we're talking about remote working, the future of remote working, and will it become the norm? So, as we know, like myself, Mike, I believe Connor as well, all working from home for the last week or so, and probably will be for quite a while. So, that's interesting. So, it's been a bit of an adjustment for me, just on the actual technical side of it, and you know how it could actually change, you know, the actual techosphere, if you like. I don't know. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, for me, it was a welcome going from a 2-hour commute like it was this morning, but admittedly that's not regularly, but typically my commute is about an hour, to literally going to maybe a 30-second commute, as long as it takes me, the length of time that it takes me to walk from the kitchen of having my breakfast over to the computer where my PC is. I'm not, through various reasons, I'm not able to do my work from my PC, so my work laptop is in the background there. But most of the things I was actually working on both my laptop and my desktop computer, because all the ticketing system and everything like that is just in a web browser, so I could just do that on my PC and have the tickets up here while I'm kind of answering the phone calls on my work laptop. Because unfortunately that's in Skype for Business. Grrr. It was quite an interesting adjustment. Speaking about me specifically, my day-to-day job is I do site visits, so that can't be done remotely. Is I have scheduled site visits. I go and I to the various customers of my company, do projects and things like that, which requires me to be physically doing there. So needless to say, I cannot do that remotely. So what I've been doing while I'm working from home is I have been joining other teams and kind of giving them a dig out with their tickets, who are more remote friendly or more remote focused, like the help desk and answering the phones and things like that. Needless to say, I can work on my own tickets in the background, but it's what is eating up my time. The majority of my time is kind of being assigned to other teams. So what I'm doing remotely is not my day-to-day role, but I am the 9-to-5 aspect of it, or the 9-to-half-5 in my case. It's quite interesting, because as soon as I finish my work, I can close the lid of the laptop and I can either continue browsing the internet on my PC here, bring up YouTube or whatever, or just walk into another room and chill out on the couch or something like that. So it's very interesting. Long term, I don't know how that would work out. Would the enthusiasm tail off, and would I get annoyed about being in the house all the time? Who knows? But in the short term, it's been interesting. And as Shane says, I could be doing this for a couple of weeks yet. So it's a experiment that shall continue.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how I adjust to it, because I could be doing it for quite a while.
What is it that you do actually, Shane?
Me?
I don't think listeners know.
I don't know. I like to keep all this separate from my professional life, but
all right, sorry.
But, no, not in that way. I don't mean it like I like to keep it separate. I don't know what the rules are around saying who my employer is, so I just don't do it.
I didn't mean like tell us who you work for. I meant what kind of a profession do you have?
Oh, I think I do tech support, basically, troubleshooting, for enterprise software. Yeah, you know, the usual. Tier 2 support, don't know if that means anything.
So more or less you kind of just log into a ticketing system and you just reply to chats and emails, or is there any phone based things? Or without getting into too much detail, I was just trying to discern how easy it is to pivot over to just working from home.
Yeah, it's a bit of a struggle because, like, my previous job, I only ever supported people through live chat and email. So it was a bit easier, you know. You could just, you know, we had MacBooks and you could just take the MacBook home and you could literally just do your work wherever. Like, you could do it out in the garden if you wanted, and it was amazing. But nowadays it's a bit more involved. I need screens. It's a bit more hands-on troubleshooting, screen shares. You know, I would troubleshoot code a little bit sometimes, you know, so it's a little bit more hands-on, and you need your monitors, you need all your shit around you. So and plus I take calls throughout the day as well. But I basically just work cases, and it's a bit more of a struggle to work from home when you're taking calls as well, because you have to worry about noise as well as your setup and your peripherals and everything. So, you know, it gets a bit more complicated. But this is the whole thing with the virus. I'm just thinking, like, I'm trying not to look at all the shit things that are going to happen, like the big recession that's going to happen, and, you know, all the people that are going to, you know, suffer and stuff. Like, what I'm looking at is, like, the opportunity. It's like, okay, forced into this situation, so see how well you do and see what new kind of new habits you get into. Or see, you know, you might find you like doing things a certain way that you didn't like before. So, you know, I'm looking at it that way, you know. And it is kind of cool to properly start, like, looking at my workspace here, because it's just in the bloody spare room in a terrace house in Dublin suburbs. So it's not glamorous, but I get to make it glamorous, you know. I get to get resourceful as well, because, you know, you can't really go to the shops or anything. Well, you can, but, like, it's a bit weird. There's nobody around.
Or Tesco or Supervalue would deliver to you, which the government is actually encouraging.
I went to Dunn's the other day. It just annoys me in the supermarket. I went there the other day, and it just was pissing me off so much, because I saw people just blithely ignoring all the advice. Just fucking mauling everything with your hand. It's like, dude, pandemic, virus, do you get it, you know, that's how it spreads, touching things with your bare hands. Why do we need to draw diagrams? Like, that just infuriated me a bit. So kind of an eerie sensation around the place. But yeah, as I said, it's an opportunity. And, you know, just to kind of look at more the techie side of it, and the technical side of all this is really interesting, because I'm like, what's going to come out of all this? Like, what, you know, because if we have a lot more time at home, we're going to get a bit more resourceful, and we're going to get a bit more curious about all the little bits and pieces that we have lying around. Like, I went through a few, I know this isn't strictly related to working from home, but I went through a big box full of old cables and USB doodads, and I was like, ooh, I forgot I had this, you know. Like, so I was like, I've got to use that for a project. So yeah, I'm looking forward to all the, you know, techie shit I'm going to be doing, because it's been a while.
I'm seriously enjoying the 5-second commute. Like, that is, I mean, I'm positioned on the DART, on the light rail system in Dublin, and that's cool, because it gets me reliably to work whenever I need to. But this is cooler. This is really, you know, I'm trying to stick to, I think, I don't know where I heard this, but to have some other clothes than your pajamas, to basically get into some other clothes outside of your pajamas. I mean, I have to anyway, because I'm dropping off my wife to work every day, and so I changed into something. I make myself my nice coffee rather than drinking from the coffee machine at work. I have a bit of an emergency setup here because I have my laptop that I use for work anyway, but because I don't have a suitable kick-ass monitor and I'm too lazy to drive to the office to bring one from there, I'm using my 32-inch television, which like kind of it sucks a little bit because 1080p at 1080p or 32-inch less than a meter, it does get a bit aliased, I'd say. It's not exactly perfect smoothness on the thing, but it's workable. And
just scale the UI and sit further back.
Yeah, but then I would have to reshuffle things, and I'm already like, if you could see it, basically I have two small tables stick together, and then there's like a chest of drawers behind them on which the tele sits, and it's all very junky and emergency. And if I was to be like, for example, I'm hoping that what is going to come out of it is that we are all going to be working maybe 3 days a week from home and 2 days in the office, like something like that, right? And if that was to happen, then I would invest into something more permanent, you know, a bit more of an office thing. But I'm kind of enjoying it. I'm enjoying the fact that I can blast Alanis Morissette from the speakers and I don't have to listen to it through headphones.
Isn't that ironic? Work.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. I would say thank you for working from home, really. But, I think I'm missing the people around me, and at the same time, I'm really grateful for the peace and quiet. It kind of is the double-edged sword. So, I'm thinking that I will have to do something not to lose my mind if this is going to last for a long time. As for Linux, I mean, I've been doing this on Linux. We use Mattermost at work for chat, which is really crucial because we need to communicate. We use Hangouts for stand-ups and other meetings, which is, I mean, it's Google and it's Hangouts, but it works more or less. The quality of the picture isn't great, but then the audio is good, so that's what matters the most. And I don't know, one surprising thing, I found out OBS is handy. I needed to explain something to someone, and instead of describing it to them or calling them, I just recorded a quick screen grab, a quick screencast in OBS and sent it to them via Mattermost. And that was, I think, really, really valuable. So,
You should check out a simple screen recorder.
I've tried it before, but I already have OBS, and I think I've had some problems with simple screen recorder and Peak. Also, I'm recording this show also on OBS as a backup, because OBS is everything, like all three of us, rather than just my stream. I already have OBS set up. So I can just press the button, and it's literally set up to capture my audio and my screen rather than my video, rather than my webcam.
It's interesting what you said about someone said something about not starting work in your pajamas. Someone else told me that today as well, and they said yeah, just don't. Like, so that seems to be a common piece of advice, which I should really follow because I don't follow it. I get up about 5 minutes before I'm supposed to and log in, and that's just who I am.
For me, it's a good half an hour because it takes me a while to get up.
I should. Some mornings I'm better than others, though. I mean, I should give myself some credit. Like, I do set my alarm for 30 to 40 minutes beforehand, and I tend to get it, like, the 5 minutes beforehand thing isn't every single morning, but it's most mornings.
So are you like still brushing your teeth during stand-up or during a meeting and survivor.
Yeah, basically, it's like, how fast can I make a coffee? How fast can I have my first cigarette? Like, I hate being in a rush, though. But it's weird. And like I said, it's not a big house, so there's only so many places you can go.
For me, because I'm joining the help desk calls kind of team, there's earlier shifts at 9 o'clock, so those guys are already up and answering phones by the time I start at 9 o'clock. So if I'm turning on my laptop, the freaking even if it's 8:45 and I'm not technically working yet, the freaking calls are binging, 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 binging. So as soon as I, it's 9 o'clock, better I'd start answering phone calls. I can't be freaking half brush my teeth and go, hello, Arthur, help us. But yeah, what I was going to say is, Mike talking about the, you know, you'd be 2 days in the office and then 3 days remotely, that actually kind of made me think, it wouldn't be very practical in my point of view, but I could see how it could be morphed into that. I could fit that. I would actually enjoy that because I'd like the variety of going from one place to the other and changing up the routine. And I mean, I'm already 2 days a week in one particular office. That is just the way I'm booked currently. So the 2 days in the week could be those 2 days, and it's a city centre place, so it's not like the big long commute. The other 3 days are just wherever. It's all sporadic. And one of the frustrations of me joining whatever this help desk team is that I'm just not familiar with that particular customer. So I'm asking all the basic questions. And like today I was like speaking to the team lead and says, oh, I've not logged into this, into their environment in a while. Like, could you reset my password? Because I've completely forgotten it. But that all comes with routine of you get to know that particular customer and you get to know the quirks and quirbles or foibles of that particular customer, and that all comes with experience. But and if I was doing it 3 days a week and in the other office 2 days a week, I'd become familiar with both, and I could certainly see myself doing that. But at the moment, this kind of thing of, right, now start answering calls.
I hate that off the starting block kind of support. It's like when it hits a certain hour, it's like, on my signal, unleash hell.
Pretty much.
Thankfully, my job is a little bit more spread out. It gets busier times, you know, especially because we deal with the US as well. So we do global support. So, deal with the US in the later half of the day, so that's when the calls pick up. But I guess one aspect of this working from home thing that I really like is because I start very early in the morning, I do a 4x10 shift and I start at 6 a.m. So it's nice not to have to cycle for nearly half an hour that hour of the morning every morning.
Now I know why you only start 5 minutes before your shift. It makes so much more sense.
I'm just enjoying it so much that I don't have to get out of bed at 5 a.m.
Got up at 6:20 this morning, and I was on the 7 o'clock bus, and I made it into the office at 8:30. And that was actually pretty good going, and that's the reason why the streets are freaking semi-deserted. Usually, if I get the 7 o'clock bus, I'll get into the office just at 9 o'clock. So yeah, a 2-hour commute, hence what I was alluding to earlier. But that is not every day, thankfully, but it was just today.
Just to make this sound a little bit less like our LinkedIn profiles. So yeah, I was just thinking how it's going to affect open source software, because there's going to be a lot of people, who are fortunate enough to be able to work from home, and they would tend to be like developers and engineers and stuff like that, and just generally people interested in it like us. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of people bored at home not a lot to do. And, you know, what's the first thing you do? Pick up the laptop and start working on that little project you've been thinking of for months. Or, you know, I don't know, contributing to software in some way, or just using it, even just seeing what's out there and tinkering with stuff. So I don't know, I can almost see, like, you know, the pandemic sprint happening, you know.
Yeah, this is going to... Oh, that was actually funny. Sorry, completely skated over what you just said. Like, this is gonna sound terrible, but there's also going to be a lot of people, even like from technical jobs, who will unfortunately be made redundant because not every company is going to make it, and they might also take up the opportunity to join an open source project to, you know, enhance their skills or to just keep on doing something. And terrible as it sounds, this might benefit the projects as well, because I don't know, not an economist here, but I'm pretty sure, and someone's mentioned it already, that a recession is probably coming, and there's going to be redundancies, and there's going to be people who will unfortunately lose their jobs. So, and it's, I think joining an open source project is probably one of the better ways of improving your LinkedIn profile.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of grimness, but there's so much kind of good to take out of it as well. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing how the world changes after this, which it most certainly will.
So basically what I wonder about is the information or misinformation that we've been seeing for quite a few years, and it's starting to really becoming major. You know, and I'm not talking just about misinformation about the epidemic, but also about everything else. You know, fake news and flat earth and everything seems to be gaining momentum, and it can, in a situation where you are at home by yourself, not talking to anybody else, this, I think, becomes really amplified. So I just wonder how will and employers will have to deal with this, because it's already, you know, it will, and teams will have to deal with it, because it will take one person to start spreading something like this on the company. Company MetaMost or companies, I don't know, Skype or whatever, whoever uses, and that can cause massive panic. So I'm just that to me will be a crucial, you know, misinformation handling is going to be a crucial part of what's going to happen next in both like in the private sector and by governments. I think there's been a news that some of the big tech companies and big social networks got together and issued a statement about misinformation about the epidemic. And I hope to see people combating this, because as you mentioned in the beginning of the episode, Shane, you were saying don't believe all the crap that you read on Facebook. And I think the crap on Facebook will have to probably get regulated.
Yeah, I mean, this is just one of the many injustices and things that are wrong with the world that are being, like, you know, they're casting a spotlight on pretty much every social issue you can name right now. So it's crazy how much it's affecting everything, you know. So with that, like the Facebook thing, yeah, exactly, you're right. It's like, it's not just a case of like, oh, you have to be responsible for the platform that you operate and how people use that and the things they will say on it. You know, you have to own that at some point. You can't just say, oh, well, we're just the distributor. You know, that doesn't wash anymore, you know. Now we're faced with a much more immediate, visible problem, and misinformation will cause suffering and death and destitution, and it will cause problems. So, you know, it's time to step up, and I'm glad they did that. I'm glad they made that commitment. I'm not sure if it's a publicity thing or they're actually going to follow through with it, or maybe they're actually doing the right thing here. I don't know, honestly, but Yeah, it's just that kind of crunch moment where it's like, okay, this is a big thing. You have a responsibility here. A lot of people get information from your services, so you know, start copping on a bit.
Yeah, this is taking a really grim turn, isn't it?
Yeah, well, maybe it's time for grim.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it actually from here, it doesn't look that grim because, you know, in Ireland, things are, I think, compared to other places in the world, things are pretty good. The government's doing more, or the
government,
the health system is doing more testing per capita than other places. There's not that many cases, it's a very well developed country as well. So I'd rather not even think about what might be happening in places where people don't have healthcare or means of communication or even a proper government. I don't know. It's definitely. I'm not even know where I'm going with this. Sorry.
I think there is kind of a heavy cloud over everything at the moment. So we're not at our funniest or most snappy today.
To use the a new witted kind of young people word, I'm totally doing an old man get off my lawn kind of moment here, but did you see a statement that was sent out by it was a Scandinavian university anyway, could have been Norwegian, if I've gotten the country wrong, please forgive me, but it was an official statement sent out on Twitter, I believe it was, and they said, "Oh, for our students who are traveling abroad and are in an area that doesn't have the health infrastructures and doesn't have these things in place, such as the USA, please come home." Yeah. And like everyone was like, "Oh, look at that university casting massive shade and everything like that." I was like, "Yeah, I'm of the generation where I never really caught up with those kind of words, but the whole thing of just at the very end, the sick burn." That's more of a generation, my generation word is sick burn. Anyway, that they did at the end was the, places that don't have these health infrastructures, such as the USA.
Well, to be honest, I mean, they don't have much of a non-private health system over there. But far be it from me on commenting on someone else's health systems. I don't know, is there anything? So we should, I think, like maybe gather it somehow towards the positive, maybe. Maybe summarize up the positive things about this, like the commute, mm-hmm. which I'm really enjoying. The fact that... if you really need peace and quiet, you do have peace and quiet. Like that's something that is worth something.
Yeah, I do like what you're saying exactly. I mean, let's I don't know. I just break it down like this. I'm just fucking delighted I have a job or that I can keep right now. You know.
Yeah. That's kind of the main thing. Yeah.
That is a bad thing. Yes,
that is true.
Yeah, so that's the kind of benefit of the working from home for me. I mean, even though you're working from home, you still get days where you just don't want to work. It's still kind of the same for me. It's just a different environment. But yeah, you just have we all have days where we're like, "Oh, I don't want to go in here." But at this time, it's like, "Oh, I don't want to go into this." Yeah, exactly. And it's just, I just get into a routine and it's going to discipline me. So it's going to be good in that sense as well, because discipline is very much what I need in my life.
So one of the downsides, you know, when you guys were saying you're at home and you could be working on this project or maybe you could work on this project and maybe they're not necessarily, they're in the general IT field, but maybe they're not necessarily work related So you could be multitasking, and like you on one monitor you have whatever emails or incoming tickets or whatever, so and if it's quiet and nothing's coming in, that you could be off researching something on the other monitor. Unfortunately for me, when I'm covering the assigned to the team that's answering all the phone calls and whatnot, yeah, every minute of my day it should be justified and accounted for. And it was a recent introduction, and it's quite annoying. Fortunately, when I'm off on site and I'm booked for a day for a customer, it's like you're booked for the day, so you're there regardless of whether it's quiet or whether it's busy, or where your time kind of fluctuates. You're there, you're booked for that time, so that's your time accounted for. But when I'm over here, it's like, oh, you didn't. You only, let's say, arbitrary example, you only logged freaking 6 hours that day. You're supposed to log 7.5, like, excluding your lunch break and so on. It's like, oh, like, check your stats, check your numbers or whatever. Like, how come you only logged this amount of time on this day and everything? I was just going, oh. So, from working in call centers, that aspect of it is what's quite annoying. But that aspect of it is not something that you can kind of, I mean, days vary. You'll have busy days, you'll have quiet days. I mean, it should be the case that as long as if there's no reason for you to be busy, then you can do whatever you want, provided you're not affecting your job. In other words, if it's a quiet time and nothing is coming in, then what does it harm that you're replying to somebody on WhatsApp and spending 5 minutes doing this or 5 minutes doing that or whatever while nothing is coming in, because you literally have it up on one screen and you can see that nothing is coming in. But the whole justification of, oh, you must log this minimum amount of time every single day regardless of whether it's busy or not, I'm like, ah. So that aspect of it kind of grinds my gears. But luckily, when I'm off visiting customers and doing site visits, I'm booked for a day, so I'm booked for that time. So it doesn't matter if they launch 60 tickets my way or only launch 6 tickets my way for that day, then it doesn't matter. I'm booked for that time. So there's that aspect of it I don't really mind at all, but it's the other aspect of having to justify your time every single day is annoying.
Well, that kind of depends on your boss, right? So where I work, we put a lot of emphasis on personal responsibility for tasks. So, and we've been doing this for all the time. So as soon as this happened, even though I feel like I should be more in control, and I'm basically making myself resist the urge to check up on everybody every 5 minutes, but I know that everybody's working because they've been working like this in the office and they are working like this when they are home. And I'm confident that this is not going to be affected. But I've previously worked in environments where that trust didn't exist. Where basically the bosses were on everyone's cases and they were micromanaging and making sure that everybody does the thing by basically standing behind their shoulder. And that kind of environment cannot possibly be translated into working from home, because if you have that in a company, then as soon as you loosen the ties, the people won't be, for a long time, they won't be able to replace that with something else, unless they are very very much driven. And people who are very much driven don't usually want to work in environments where they are being micromanaged. So this is going to, in my opinion, also show which companies have got the good culture of people working by their own and self-responsibly, and which companies tend to micromanage. And the companies who tend to micromanage are not going to be doing very well.
So I think we've suitably depressed the shit out of everybody. I think we shall move on to the closing chapters of this book that you're listening to.
In audio form.
Connor has a quick shout out for us.
This is Invidious. So it's literally invidio.us is the webpage. And it is a alternative front end for YouTube. So all of your YouTube videos are here. It's actually quite nice layout. I mean, for those who kind of like a simple YouTube layout and don't really like the direction the YouTube UI is going in, it's a quite simple, just presents the videos to you there. Only criticisms I will have for it is that I found is that it says that you can log in with your Google account, but I kept getting an error when I tried to do it because I wanted to get my subscriptions, my tailored subscriptions that have been logged against my Google account. But it seemed to be that there's a lot of tech-focused things on the default page anyway. I mean, there's Linus Tech Tips and a couple of physics demonstrations and kind of board games, like this might be specifically tailored to me, but like I have a Doom Eternal review, I've like Marcus Brownlee MK PhD, I've Last Week Tonight, and I've like things from Wendover Productions and a very good wide range of things from the YouTube community. One thing I did find is that even though I can view 1080p no problem on 1080p streams on YouTube regularly, like my bandwidth can handle it, my CPU can handle it, no problems whatsoever there. Anytime that I select auto on Nvidia's, it seemed to auto default to 720p, and then when I tried to manually bump it up to 1080p, I found that it buffered quite a bit. So I'm guessing that they only have it's the ping rate, and I'm guessing that they only have one or two content servers, and they must be all over the US, whereas Google probably have a local server that's close to me that they're able to just send the content to me really quickly. They have a local mirror, so I'm able to view 1080p streams or videos no problem, and it buffers quite well. Whereas here I found that 1080p struggled and it defaulted to 720p. So that's my guess, is that they just don't have the mirrors. But if it's very simple front end to YouTube if you want an alternative front end to YouTube, and it even has a dark mode.
Yeah, it is. I like the simplicity, and I like that it doesn't run the ads. It's very fast as well. The video buffers quicker than on YouTube, I noticed. So that's cool. I mainly watch YouTube through the Chromecast anyway, though, so I watch it on the TV mostly. But yeah, that's an interesting one. If I'm ever sitting at the computer and I don't want to have to put up with the autoplay thing constantly, even I know you can turn it off, but I just never do it. But moving on to the events or event. So as you know, Fostalk Live 2020 is currently still tentatively scheduled for the 20th of June 2020 at the Harrison near King's Cross in London. You know, it's up in the air. I don't know. I'm not the organizer. So talk to Joe Ressington if you would like to know
talk
more.
Talk to Joe. For all you Irish listeners.
Exactly. Yeah, the Irish people will get the talk to Joe reference. So it's been a bumper show. I'm not sure how much I edited this down by the time it goes out. So it mightn't be even that long, but I think it still will be. So, without further ado, I've been Shane.
I've been Connor.
And I've been Mike.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.